What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Tar and the Jets Live. I'm your host, Steven Zantz, joined by my co-host, Steven Russo. No guests this week, special Monday edition of the show. You know, got some things going on this week, and, you know, we figure we don't want to make you guys wait a full week almost and to talk about this Jets-Colts game and preview next week. Steven, how you doing tonight, man?
I'm good, man. Four days to let that loss marinate. You know, it gets a little bit easier, but you still kind of stew a little bit, especially, you know, Mike White going down and the wind kind of getting taken out of your sails. But I'm doing okay. I realize this is what the season about. This is what this season is about. Going to be some growing pains. There's going to be ups and downs, but doing okay. How are you, man?
Yeah, same here. I mean, I wasn't overly upset about the game, to be honest with you. It was like, it's just once you get down to the third string quarterback, you can't really get mad at the team for losing. The guys should not even really be on the field. And the only reason he's active is because Zach is hurt. And I guess they just didn't want to activate Flacco, which is kind of weird at this point because they traded a draft pick for him. But like the defense was bad, but it wasn't the part of the defense that we thought would be bad. It was the defensive line just not being able to stop anything. Like Jonathan Taylor, granted, he's a very good player. So I don't want to really downplay his performance because he does, you know, do this to a lot of teams. But he just literally looked like Barry Sanders, Emmitt Smith out there and just did whatever he wanted. And it's like, it's a little embarrassing that the strength of the team was really the Achilles heel of the team. Carson Wentz was okay, but it's just, it's unacceptable to just get gashed on the ground like that when the strength of the team is supposed to be that defensive line that, you know, has always been vaunted as, you know, amazing. But, you know, it's one game. We scored some points. Elijah Moore seems to really be coming along. Michael Carter continues to be really solid. So like you have some things, but you know, at the end of the day, you still want to, you know, be a little more competitive than that and not give up 45 points, which is kind of embarrassing because you think about it, they gave up 45, they gave up 54 to the Patriots, and they also give up 31 to the Bengals. That's not good. Salah's MO is defense. And, you know, I know that defensively against the Bengals, they actually had a lot of opportune plays, which is why they won the game. But you still got to, you know, if you want to win this league, you can't be giving up 30 plus points every week. What do you think? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, 130 points given up in three weeks combined. I mean, that's not good. I tend to think that the Bengals game wasn't great, but it was obviously a little better than, you know, New England and Indianapolis. I think you got to take kind of that 10,000 foot view and look at this as, okay, it's the youngest team in the league coming off a big win. Right. And then traveling on 3 days rest and playing on Thursday night. But to your point, you know, I think if you had asked any Jets fan or, you know, anyone that has any involvement with the team at all, what one positional group that they were confident in coming into the season would have been the defensive line. So to know that they failed the way they did coming into this game against the Colts when, you know, the Colts could have told us their game plan before the game. They knew, you know, everyone knew you're going to run Jonathan Taylor. Like Carson Wentz, he's having a decent year, but you're not scared of him. So to have them gash the Jets defense the way they did, I think Samini tweeted out that it was like, you know, they were averaging 7 yards before getting touched, you know, running the ball, which is just an insane stat. So to get gashed for 260 yards, it sucked to have the Colts come out, score touchdowns on 6 out of their 7 first offensive drives. The only one they didn't score on was a goal line stuff. Like, so they made it down there every time on those first 7 drives. Like, it was a tough pill to swallow, but I agree. When you kind of take a step back and you look at it, like I was still glued to the TV, the offense looking improved, kept me in it. It kind of leaves a sour taste in your mouth knowing that if they had just gotten one or two stops along the way, or maybe even recovered a damn fumble, that the course of the game could have changed and maybe it would have looked different, you know, come the end of it. But if you switch to the other side of the ball, give credit where it's due. Mike LaFleur, public enemy number one through the first 6 games. Now he looks like Booth LaFleur is like a god to Jets fans because now you actually have an offense that's outpacing the defense, which, you know, we've never had. Third string quarterback thrown for 300 yards with a second string quarterback thrown for 400 the week before. I mean, the offense has looked good. And the cherry on top here is that it's on the backs of these young core players that we are legitimately excited about that are going to be foundational pieces. It's on the backs of, you know, Michael Carter and Ty Johnson and Elijah Moore. Elijah Moore with his best game so far as a pro. And it just, I'm very excited about where this offense could be. So as we kind of transition towards what this looks like, and I want to kind of get in with you and get your thoughts on the success that Mike White and Josh Johnson had and what that means for your thoughts on Zach Wilson when he returns. What are you thinking there? Because I think there's two ways this could swing. Is like, people look at it as negative for Zach Wilson saying, well, if these two guys can do it, why the hell isn't he, or why the hell didn't he? Or they could say, you know what, this is an encouraging sign for what this offense could look like when Zach ultimately comes back and we think he can return to form or to what we think he could be.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think you really got to look at it in both directions, because obviously it's concerning that, you know, we thought the offense was broken, but obviously you saw two different quarterbacks be productive in it. But I will say is it's really hard to compare Zach to Mike White and Josh Johnson. I know people are going to point to Mike White never playing a meaningful snap in the NFL, but at the end of the day, he still has been in an NFL building for 3 years already, and he still has been watching defenses and been in those rooms with people talking about what to look for and what to see. And, you know, he's a different skill set than Zach. He's going to get those check downs and everything. And Josh Johnson is a 35-year-old veteran quarterback. He's been in the league for, what, 13 years? So clearly he knows how to run an NFL offense. He may not necessarily be, like, this amazing player, but it's hard to just really, like, compare the two when Zach is just coming from BYU and he never played him or sat in an NFL, you know, quarterback room up until, you know, 6 months ago. So, I mean, I think Zach is going to look like a different player whenever he gets on the field. I know, obviously, the debate is he going to play this week, because they purposely didn't put him on IR because they were holding out hope he could return against Buffalo. But at the same time, I think, you know, he's sat in the booth of the floor against Cincinnati, and then last week he was on the sideline. I just think that, you know, he's going to realize that he's got to make, like, you know, the easier throws. Don't force it. And just take what the defense is giving, because obviously LaFleur has shown that he's able to be creative. You know, he's done a bunch of trick plays. You know, they've been doing a little more unique things compared to what we saw. It seems like they're not, you know, running every first down. They're actually trying to, you know, throw the ball down the field. So I'm encouraged to see what Zach can do. I mean, I think we just talked about this before we went live. I think you really got to be careful with Zach. You don't want him to re-injure this. And I'm sure that they're obviously keeping that in mind. At the same time, it's like you're kind of eager to see what he can do. And I think just watching from afar is only going to help him, because, you know, a lot of great quarterbacks didn't start it right away, and they had the benefit of just watching someone else do it.
Yeah. I mean, I think this time off is only going to benefit him. And, you know, I was never in the camp of Zach Wilson sucks, you know, leading up to this whole Mike White and Josh Johnson thing either. I mean, he's a rookie quarterback in his first six starts that had an up and down games. You know, I think if you go back through it, I think he was mediocre at Carolina. He was bad against New England. He didn't play poorly against Denver, had a great game against Tennessee, you know, a decent second half against Atlanta. And I think that's where we really started to see where he couldn't really hit those easy throws. I was like, oh, this is something to, you know, kind of have cause for concern. You know, so I was never discouraged by Zach Wilson or his performance, you know, leading up to these couple of games. But I think the fact that Mike White and Josh Johnson have had success in the system leaves me encouraged about the system and extremely encouraged about what it's going to look like when Zach Wilson returns. And I think given the choice, I'd obviously rather have a quarterback that we'd have to coach on how to hit the checkdowns and how to take the easy stuff, as opposed to vice versa. And someone that was so willing to check it down and never look downfield, I feel like it'd be much easier to coach Zach Wilson to figure out, you know, okay, listen, when, you know, they're taking away this deep stuff, this is what you got to hit. Or when they give this look, your underneath stuff's going to be available. I'd rather have that guy that you can coach to hit the easy stuff and still keep that, you know, kind of big play game in his repertoire. So I'm not panicked on Zach Wilson or anything. I'm encouraged for what he's going to look like after a couple games out, and, you know, knowing what this offense can be when it's run efficiently, I think is extremely encouraging as well. And I'm wholeheartedly in agreement with you on what they should do this week. If there's any shred of doubt that Zach Wilson's not 100%, he shouldn't even be active. Get him back this week to practice. I think that's kind of the big thing as to why they didn't put him on IR, is not so much to play this Bills game, but to get him back for this week of practice. If Mike White's healthy, you start him. You have Josh Johnson as the number two, because clearly he proved that he could do it. I don't know what, you know, the Flacco thing we can get in. I'm not losing sleep over them trading a six-round pick for, you know, not knowing what they had in the building with Mike White. I don't know if anyone could have predicted that. But keep Zach Wilson inactive. Let Mike White start. Josh Johnson the backup. Bring Zach Wilson back when he's 100% against Miami.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, I feel good about the coaching staff, believe it or not. I know the defense obviously just got gashed, But I like the ability to adapt. I think that they're trying different things, and I still want them to be aggressive and go for it on fourth down more often, especially when they're up across the 50 and just like try different things that really, a coach who's really coaching for his job couldn't get away with. But you got to remember on the defensive side of the ball, I don't want to make excuses for them. It's still a really young defense, and there's a dearth of talent there. I mean, like, who the hell is playing safety for this team anymore? Because I really don't know. And I do want to, give you just like basically thank Marcus May, because he's not coming back. He played his last down as a Jet. I know you put that in your first and 10 column that came out today. Everyone check it out on turnthejets.com. I just think that you got to remember that. Like, it's a young secondary. The safeties, Ashton Davis has been okay at best. I mean, he kind of leaves a lot of meat on the bone. I mean, he makes some plays sometimes, but he obviously there's miscues because I don't think that he really knows how to read cover, like read what those the offense is trying to do. I think he's trying to rely on his, really strong athleticism that he has. He's probably the most athletic player on the defense, really, for the most part. But at the end of the day, I think, it's the youngest team in the NFL. And I think that there's progress that's been made, especially on the offensive side of the ball, because we felt like the offense was so far behind the defense. And now it seems like the switch is flipped. So I feel good about it, but I really hope that this defense can learn how to recover a fumble, because there was three fumbles on one drive that they had plenty of opportunities to maybe shift the game in their favor. And that's like the frustrating part is it kind of felt like, I don't know if you saw yesterday, the Jaguars kicker, he had three opportunities to kick a field goal on the same drive. There was two penalties. He missed every single one. It was literally like the Jets trying to recover a fumble. It's like something has to give. You got to get those opportunities. They're not going to happen all the time. And we saw how long it took for them to get an interception. So it's like, you have to play with an urgency. You have to be there and fall on that football, because you just don't know. Like, if you fall, if one thing goes your way, it could shift the game. And we talked about it after the Bengal game. It's like, if Elijah Moore doesn't make that tackle on the pick on the interception, they probably lose the game. So it's like, you just never know how one play in football can really shift the momentum.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to, so you talk about the way that LaFleur is coaching. So I want to take, and I, some of it's got to be attributed to him just being in the booth, but he's definitely emptied the bag when it comes to trick plays over the course of the last few weeks. So I'd like to see him continue to do that when Zach Wilson does return. We've talked about the fact that, listen, you guys should, this coaching staff should be coaching like they're playing with house money here. They should be taking risks. They should be doing those things, going forward on the opponent's side of the field. The one play I'll go back to on the floor that I absolutely love was him doing the double pass to Crowder back to Michael Carter on third and 15. That's the first drive with your third string quarterback in, and they get in the third and 15, which a lot of teams would have just been, let's run a draw play, let's run a screen play, a screen pass, we're going to be fine punting, but they weren't. And they got the first down, which is great. Now, unfortunately, one of those plays you talk about that could swing momentum, then Ty Johnson, I think, fumbles, a play or two after that, and the whole momentum shifts anyways. But the Jets, we've talked about this so much on the show. The Jets just simply, they're not a good enough team to be able to overcome some of these mistakes that they're making. So when you talk about penalties or drop picks or missed tackles or fumbles that happen, fumbles that they force that they don't recover, those are just those things that could momentum shift and change the course of a game. And especially when you come back and you start making stops and, late in the third quarter and fourth quarter, and you're down there with a minute to go, ready to score a touchdown. It's like the landscape of that game could have completely changed. So it's a double-edged sword. It leaves you like you have a sour taste in your mouth, but it also leaves you feeling kind of encouraged. Like, well, at least this team fought. And I think not only are we seeing the offense improve, I think Will tweeted out the stats that the Jets are actually top 15 in passing right now, which is just insane. Right. But like, that's
what a world.
just take a step back and realize what an Adam Gase team would have looked like going down 28-10 at the half last year. And, this team fought back. I think that says a lot about Saleh and the coaching staff and what they're building here. I don't want to spend too much time looking in and harping on one game. You have to kind of look at it holistically here, but I think that is an encouraging sign. So I hope that with, 10 days off here, that Saleh and Ulbrich can really get into this and fix these defensive line and defensive issues. Cause overall, man, it hasn't looked pretty the last 3 weeks. I think they played above expectation for the first part of the season. Last 3 weeks, it's been regressing to the mean, probably below the mean. another thing I think you can attribute, CJ Mosley didn't have a very good game. On Thursday
he's
night.
He's been pretty good every other game.
Yeah. he's been otherworldly, for the first seven games of the year. So The fact that he had a down game, the Jets just simply, that's another one of those things you're just simply not good enough to overcome. So they need him to play lights out every week to have a chance on defense. And he just, you know, like you said, he was due.
I mean, I want to call out John Franklin Myers. Ever since he got the bag, man, he's done nothing. I don't want to jump to conclusions, but I'm getting a lot of, you know, Mo Wilkerson vibes. It's like, come on, man. Like, you were this awesome player that we were all super excited. Everyone was like banging on the table, resign this guy, which I'm happy they did. And I don't really think that he's going to be like that. You know, I think that teams are maybe scheming around him, knowing what he can do. And I think he'll be fine in the long term, but I'm a little just disappointed. You know, he was a disruptive force, even in that Pats game that, you know, obviously we were awful in. He was awesome in that game, and he was great really until the Atlanta game when they dropped him back in coverage on Kyle Pitts, which made no sense whatsoever. But that's just one thing I wanted to call out, because it's been a little frustrating to see him not really make much of an impact every week since he got the contract. Mm-hmm. But I also want to flip the switch there and give credit to the offensive line, because even though they lost, I think still think they continue to play much better, especially in the interior, which has been the problem. I mean, we know Elijah Vera Tucker is good. We know Morgan Moses is rock solid. And I'm happy George Fant came back, even though Odoga held his own against Cincinnati. So, you know, it was definitely an Achilles heel and really the punching bag for a while, because we just felt like the offense was being held back because the offensive line wasn't protecting or really opening up holes to run. But they've been much better. And I got to give, like, you know, Van Roten and McGovern a little bit of credit here, as much as I, you know, like to rip them. They've been playing better. So you got to give credit to the staff there, because clearly they've made adjustments to really, you know, hide the deficiencies, especially when GVR has. So, you know, you got to think of good things that happen, and there's still a lot of ball to be played. I mean, Jets still have, what, 9 games left, and, you know, probably 8 more with Zach playing quarterback, because Salah did say today at his presser that if Zach Wilson's healthy, he's the quarterback. He finally gave him the ringing endorsement that we were, like, wondering where it was last week. I think he just didn't want to put unfair pressure on Zach, and also just – he's like, Mike White deserved another game. So I think that's really where his head was at. But, guys, they spent the number 2 pick on Zach. They owed him – they paid $35 million to get this guy here. So it's like, unless Mike White is, like, literally throwing for 403 touchdowns and they're winning games, he's not going to be the quarterback. I hate to break everyone's bubble. But if he plays well this week, I'll be happy. So I'm gonna make sure that I cover my ass a little bit
there. No, I agree with that, the offensive line. You know, the Jets in 2 weeks have put up almost 1,000 yards of offense. You can't do that if your O-line is playing like shit. So, you know, obviously we're seeing improvement. And, you know, kudos to the offense too. They're doing it without their starting quarterback, without their starting left tackle, and without their number one wide receiver in Corey Davis. So the fact that they've been able to do this obviously is a good sign. And again, you know, props to LaFleur for being able to do it. He's you know, he's coaching well right now. I hope it continues for obvious reasons. It'll be interesting to see when Corey Davis returns, how that wide receiver rotation, how that, we'll say, pass catcher rotation works out. Cause now you got Croft injured. Hopefully Corey Davis comes back from the hip this week. I think one of the things that all Jets fans can agree on is that rotation of players and how he's used them over the course of the last 2 games has been much improved. And that's all something that we can get behind and we like. So I'm, you know, no one will know if Corey Davis being out, you know, contributed to that. And if Corey Davis returning will maybe have him go back to what he was doing prior, but I hope he keeps this same mentality and same rotation. And for all of us that were clamoring for Denzel Mims to get more playing time, man, we had your back, dude. Catch the ball, Denzel, please catch the ball when it's thrown to you.
Yeah, no, but you know what I think has been a good thing, at least with this receiving core, you know, being shifted around because of the injury to Corey Davis, it's shown that Elijah can be the guy, and I think they're going to scheme more for him than Corey Davis going back. I think that's a good thing, because I think Corey is more suited as a number 2 option, not a number 1 option, but obviously because we didn't really have one and that was what he was signed to do, that's why he was playing that role. But I think LaFleur's realized, I got to figure out ways to ensure that Elijah Moore is getting the football, because once he's in the open fields, he makes so many guys miss, and he's so shifty. He does a lot of the same things that, like, Kadarius Toney does. I'm not going to compare him to Tyreek Hill, but, you know, he can literally make plays in the open field. He's obviously not as fast as Tyreek Hill, but he's just so damn elusive, and it's just really fun to watch because he seems like the most fun young player that the Jets have had on offense, and I don't even really know how long. I mean, they haven't had a lot of them. I know Keyshawn's your boy. Would you say he's the most young, fun receiver that they've had, really, since Keyshawn was a rookie?
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, people, influences, and experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
Yes, probably. Right. I think you could. Yeah, I mean, I think you probably, even though we didn't draft it, you could probably throw Santonio Holmes in that. When the Jets had Santonio and Braylon, those guys were fun, except that was just such a run-heavy offense. But that 2010 run with Santonio making those plays, he was young and exciting at that time. So, but yeah, we can go back.
I think Elijah could be better, honestly.
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
I think Elijah could be like a top 12 receiver in the NFL. Like, I think
throw Lavernius in there.
Good.
Lavernius Coles is in there.
Was like, he was good. He wasn't like amazing. He was really solid. Like, he was just a very good player. Yeah. He was good because he was a Jet. He would never have been like other fan bases probably would just like, yeah, he's a solid guy. Like, I mean, I kind of feel like that about Khatri. Like, he was just a very solid player. I mean, mm-hmm. Coles was better because he obviously was a full-time starter, whereas Khatri was a slot guy and he wasn't obviously getting, you know, as many targets as those guys. Yeah, but Lavernius was awesome. I mean, you know, couldn't say enough good things about him. I loved it. I mean, there's a lot of good guys, but we never had like, I mean, Brandon Marshall in 2015 was the closest thing I've seen to a superstar wide receiver on a Jets offense. Decker was really good, but Marshall was just like, it was insane what he did. And that's probably what like Pete Keyshawn felt like for you, because obviously I was really young when Keyshawn was on the team. I had a Keyshawn jersey. Don't worry, I had one, but like, I don't really remember watching him play. Corbett was really the first receiver that I remembered watching play that was like really good for the Jets.
That 98 year with Keyshawn and Vinny Testaverde was special. Keyshawn was out of his mind good. And you can make an argument in 99, he really was better, except he played with, you know, the likes of Rick Meyer for a couple of games and then Ray Lucas. And, you know, Ray Lucas was good down that stretch, but he wasn't Vinny. But either way, yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, and I think James last week brought up an interesting point about, you know, kind of asking the question of what positional groups give Joe Douglas confidence moving into next year to where he feels like he doesn't have to either quote unquote fix it or even, you know, add a bunch to that room through the draft. And I think the wide receiver room is kind of coming into form as one of those groups that we feel pretty good about as the season is progressing. And I think the reason is because you're not relying on guys like Jeff Smith as your number one or number two option, right? Jeff Smith is a fine five or a six. And clearly he's shown that when he's throwing the ball, he can make the catch, which is great. But now you've got guys like Keelan Cole and Jameson Crowder and Elijah Moore that are all reliable. And when you add Corey Davis back in that mix, like that's what a wide receiver core should look like. You shouldn't have to rely on Jeff Smith being your number one guy, but he's fine as a five. So when you like Keelan Cole made a couple of really, really tough catches that were really good.
I want to bring him back. I really do. I really like him, and he's a good locker room guy. I've seen him in the videos they post and in One Jets Drive. I want them to bring him back. I
100% agree with you. And I think that at a minimum of Cole and Crowder, the Jets should bring one of those two back, and I wouldn't be opposed to bringing them both back. I think Crowder's a solid piece too. I've been on the Crowder bandwagon for a while. I think as you continue to grow this offense and grow this, you know, try to put pieces around this QB, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to bring them both back and run it back with this wide receiver core next year.
Yeah. I mean, I personally don't think they're going to bring Crowder back. And I think it's more or less because I think he wants to play for a contender, and the Jets are still probably, I think next year, assuming they make the right moves, are probably going to be in the hunt. Hopefully that's what we're hoping for. I know we've been talking about this for a while already, but I think he'd rather go to a team that actually is like pretty much a shoe-in, assuming the quarterback that they have doesn't get hurt, to go to the playoffs. Like, I mean, Kansas City to me is such a good spot for him because they really need a second wide receiver in that offense, because Mecole Hardman's okay. And obviously, you know, Tyreek is Tyreek. But Travis Kelce is getting a little bit older. He fits so well. He could be such a good security blanket for Mahomes. I just think he's going to go somewhere where he feels like he actually has a chance to win a Super Bowl. The Jets are probably not there. Even if they made the playoffs next year, probably, you know, it's wild card weekend, and that would be like a tremendous season. Yeah. But I also think they wouldn't hate, you know, going a little more on the youth side. You know, next year you're locked into Corey Davis. You're locked into Elijah. Those two for sure. Obviously, Keelan Cole is a free agent. He signed a one-year contract. I don't know what Jeff Smith's contract is. I don't know what Braxton Berrios is. I like Berrios too. I think Berrios is good on special teams. He always gets pretty solid returns, and I think the special teams unit is so underrated.
But he fair catches too much.
What's that?
I said he fair catches too much.
He does, but like, he's good on
returns. I'd rather have that than have a guy that fumbles or that's a. I don't ever question that Braxton's going to catch the punt. You know what I mean? So yeah. it's not a wild like card whether he's going to fumble or not. So I'd rather have
a useful player, because when he's thrust into the offense, he actually catches the ball, and he's quick and fast, and he plays specials, and you need guys who can play specials, and he seems like a good locker room guy. I want to keep him, but like, I'm sure they're going to shuffle things around, but they definitely have to upgrade the tight end room. What I'll say is Croft is obviously decent. Like, you know, he made that unbelievable catch early, you know, in the game. He's not like a guy that you're just like super excited about, but like, I would bring him back if you brought back. If you got somebody else, I mean, you cannot run it back with Ryan Griffin. And I mean, we don't really know what Kenny Yeboah is. And I was kind of hoping he would get an opportunity, but it doesn't seem like he's going to do much. And I know DJ said like, don't expect much out of him. I'd imagine they're probably going to draft the tight end in the early rounds. I would love the guy from Ohio State, Ruckert. He's really, really good. And I think this is a decent tight end class. And I think that's really a place where you have to invest the pick. I mean, depending on, you know, how the season nets out, I would be fine with a corner. I mean, if they're in position to take Stingley or Calvin Booth, you have to do it. I mean, you need like a definitive, you know, number two corner. I know Michael Carter II has shown a lot of flashes and I like him, but maybe, you know, they would move him to the slot full time, because I know they've kind of shifted him and Guidry, and Guidry's been pretty good too. I mean, like, overall, the corners have not been the problem. I mean, they're going to get exposed at some point. I mean, the fact that they held Jamar Chase, who literally was tearing the NFL apart, it's good. But I mean, listen, it's a young team, like we keep saying, and I'm excited for the future. I think, you know, assuming Zach takes the steps that we're hoping he will, especially when he comes back from injury, it's like next year could really be one of the most fun seasons. And there's been some fun moments. I mean, like, I actually – you know, don't feel hopeless about the staff. I know a couple of weeks ago, we were all really down after the New England game, but like, they're showing signs. It's a young team, young staff, and you got to be encouraged with LaFleur. But I want to shift obviously to this week, because, you know, divisional game, we're playing Buffalo, but I'm not saying they're going to win this game, because number one, we don't know who's playing quarterback, but it seems like all signs are pointing to Mike White. And I think that would be a smart move, just to ensure that Zach's 100% healthy. And, you know, we got a full 3 weeks to watch, but what you saw from Buffalo is they play down to their competition. I mean, they've already lost three games. I mean, none of their wins are really impressive. I was listening to Bill Simmons this morning, and they're talking about the teams that they beat. They beat the Texans. They beat Miami twice, who's pretty bad. So that's three wins. And they haven't played New England yet, and they haven't played us yet. I'm just trying to – I can't remember their wins. But they really don't have any impressive wins. They lost to the Steelers. They lost to the Titans. Oh, they beat
the Chiefs.
Yeah, but the Chiefs aren't good. That win looked a lot better at the time, but they're not that good. I mean, they were pretty terrible yesterday. I mean, they're lucky that Aaron Rodgers was not playing quarterback for the Packers, because if he was, they were losing that game, because the Packers defense was really good yesterday. They just could not score any points. But my point is that Buffalo's just not. Oh, yeah, they beat Washington. I know they beat Washington too. So it's like they're a good team. I mean, they're, you know, the best team in our division, I would say, but fucking Patriots, excuse my language, you're creeping up, and it's really pissing me off, because it's kind of hoping there's a few demise of them. But I also don't think they're that good. I mean, they beat us twice. They have one home win, and it was against us. So it's like, you got to win home games if you want to be a good team in the NFL. But my point is that I don't think Buffalo is a scary opponent where everyone's like, don't play Zach. We don't want to embarrass him. I mean, like, they just scored 6 points against the Jaguars or whatever it was. Josh Allen looked lost. I mean, so my point is that this is a winnable game. I mean, let Mike White start, and if he sucks, you could go right back to Zach, and nobody will ever care about Mike White anymore. But he'll probably be the backup quarterback at least next year, you know? What do you think?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think there's a lot of things here. So, first of all, you know, Jets only beat division winners at home, so watch out, Buffalo. Right. But no, I mean, in all honesty, you know, the Bills are struggling a little bit. I think they're injured on the offensive line. I think the offensive line isn't playing up to par. I know, you know, I'm in Central New York, man. So I got a lot of Bills fans, friends that that I hear a lot about. So, you know, they're bitching about Dable. You know, I don't think Dable's I think he's kind of public enemy number one right now in Buffalo. Please. But I listen, man, I'm just telling you, I'm reporting what I hear. But here's the thing. I do think this is a winnable game. You know, a lot of things have to go right and click for the Jets. And I'm very concerned, obviously, about their defense. If they come out and they show up the way that they did against the Colts, we're going to get boat raced. It's not going to be good if you can't. That the Bills offense, forget about what they showed in Jacksonville. This Bills offense is much better than the Colts offense. So, you know, the other thing, I'm sorry, I'm losing my train of thought here. Oh, it's Zach Wilson. You know, I don't think the question about whether or not to start Zach Wilson was really about getting embarrassed by the Bills. I think it's just, he's a young quarterback. If he's not healthy enough to start, then just don't play him. And when you have, when you come back and you have a home stretch, then, you know, that includes, Miami and who else is coming? It's Miami at Houston, a couple other easy games, right, coming up at home. I think that's kind of the, you know, what you're looking to do. It was never about getting embarrassed by Buffalo. If he's 100% healthy, then start him, because you want him to get the experience. If he's not, don't start him. That's it. So I don't know what to think about this Buffalo game, man. I'm excited to see what 10 days to review that defensive performance from Saul and Ulbrich, and how this defense is going to look and show up against a really good Bills offense. And we'll see what Mike White looks like if he's healthy, if he's 100% and what he comes out with. And let's hope that we can continue to see offensive progress, because Jets have played well at home. They're a young team. I think that's expected. They're going to play better at home than they do on the road. But it'll be exciting to see how they come out against the Bills. I don't think anyone's expecting a win. If they keep it competitive, I consider consider it a moral victory, or whatever you want to say. But that's all we're really looking for. That's all we're looking for out of this season.
Yeah. And the one thing about the Bills, and the only reason I know this is because I have Zach Moss in fantasy, and obviously I'm paying close attention to his stats every week. He really can't run the ball. And that was obviously the biggest problem for the Jets. I mean, if they run the ball against the Jets, we have some issues, because Zach Moss is, I don't think, ever really had any more than like 60 yards in a game. He'll probably beat us from like catches in the backfield, because that's usually how he's been pretty solid this year. But I'm interested to see how these corners go against Diggs, Sanders, and Beasley, because it's definitely one of the more potent groups that they're going to go against all year. Obviously, they haven't played Tampa Bay yet, which, man, if they're fully healthy and Brown is healthy, because I know he's been on crutches from an ankle injury, that's going to be really terrifying to watch Mike Evans, Godwin, Gronk, and what's it called, Antonio Brown. That's like literally a nightmare. But they also might have like their playoff spot already locked in, so they may not be playing those guys. But that's going to be like the most interesting matchup. I want to see how these guys, especially Bryce Hall, goes against Diggs. He's been tremendous. Like, he is just always, you know, playing to his assignment. He never gets burned. I mean, obviously he's going to miss sometimes. I mean, maybe get a penalty or two, but I really want to see how he performs against Stephon Diggs. And Stephon Diggs has kind of been very okay this year. He's not been the Stephon Diggs of 2020. So this is the game that he breaks out and maybe we'll show up Bryce Hall, but I'm super excited to see that. I also want to see how the Jets run the ball. I mean, I know the corners are really elite for, the secondary as a whole for Buffalo is really strong, but the run defense is okay. They can definitely are a little more prone to giving up big rush plays. I know a lot of teams have had success against them. I really want to see Michael Carter get a 100-yard game. That would just make me so happy because the guy is so good and so shifty and talented, and he just seems like he's just so close to just breaking through. Just like we finally got Elijah to break through with those two touchdowns. It's like, I just really want to see a 100-yard game out of Michael Carter. It'd make me so happy.
Yeah, well, I think when you talk about, you know, Bryce Hall, the secondary, obviously you got to talk about, you know, the absence of Marcus May. So what the safety positional group is going to look like. You mentioned earlier in the show, I mean, Ashton Davis, I really don't know what to think. I brought it up last week. I don't think he's looked good. I'm not an analyst. I mean, you know, I don't break down the safety position, but just the eye test, he doesn't look great to me. I think there were differing opinions on what Ashton Davis has looked like too. You know, Connor Rogers on Badlands said that Ashton Davis didn't look good. You look at a guy like LeJay Dusable who's saying, you know, you guys clearly, or, you know, saying to someone on Twitter that you don't understand football because Ashton Davis played his ass off. So I don't know, but pair Ashton Davis with whoever the hell else is going to be back there at safety against a really good, you know, Bills offense and specifically a Bills receiving core. You don't know if Dawson Knox is coming back, but at the same time, like you got to think about the way the Jets played against Cincinnati. That Cincinnati team was freaking hot coming in there. I don't think Joe Burrow is Josh Allen, but when you look at that group of, you know, receivers and tight ends with, Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, and then Uzoma. Like that's, you know, that's a good core. And that's a good group there.
And Boyd.
Yes, you're right. And Boyd. And the Jets were able to handle it. So it's all a matter of which team shows up. I mean, I think obviously the Jets playing at home, that benefits them. I think having 10 days to prepare, you would hope benefit them. I did think that, you know, coming out of the bye week too, and look what happened. But let's, you know, I think the biggest thing is going to be, can this defensive line show up and play like the defensive line that we, thought we were going to get coming into this season? I think that's going to be a real key. Cause I think the Bills offensive line is hurt. They're struggling a little bit. If you can get after Josh Allen and make him make some mistakes, then the tide could turn. You could be looking at a game where they could pull one off. That's a little bit unexpected.
Yeah. Very possible. I mean, we can make our picks, even though it's very early in the week and a lot can happen. I'm going to make a pick for both contingencies. So assuming if Zach Wilson plays, I'm going to make a pick. If Mike White plays, I'm going to make a pick. And if you really want to go crazy, I can make a Josh Johnson pick, but I don't think that Josh Johnson's going to play. So if Mike White plays, I think that the Jets will probably play a little bit better because he's obviously been playing in Zach's little rusty. So I think in both scenarios, they lose. But I think if Mike White plays, it's a lot closer. I think it's like more of like a 24-20 game. And if Zach Wilson plays, I want to say it's like 28-17. So not that big of a drop-off, but I think Buffalo is probably going to win, especially after having such a terrible loss, you know. But the one thing I will say is the Jets last year played Buffalo actually decent in both games, and they were one of the worst teams in football, if not the worst, depending on who you talk to. Because obviously the Jaguars ended up with the first pick, but if you watch the Jets, they just lost their first 13 games. Yeah. My point is it's a division game, so a lot of things could be thrown out the window. I mean, like, Miami somehow was playing Buffalo tough a couple weeks ago, and I know they ultimately lost by double digits, but they gave them a lot of problems. So I think the game will be a little bit closer than people expect. I think the line is 13.5, which is obviously a lot, but we just saw that Buffalo laid 14 at first versus Jacksonville. You know, anything could happen. So what do you think? Are you going to do two picks or just one pick?
I'll just do one pick. I think there's really no chance that Zach Wilson starts here. I think we're going to roll with Mike White. If he's got feeling back in that hand, then he'll be good to go. And I think that's a smart thing. I think if there's any shred of doubt that Zach doesn't or isn't 100%, then just sit him and don't even activate him. Like I said earlier, I think this game is closer. I don't think it's, I don't think the Jets are giving up 45 again. I don't think it's over in the second quarter, but I think ultimately it's a 2-score game and the Bills win 31-21, but I think it's a little closer than that score with the Bills scoring a touchdown late. To solidify it. But I think Mike White comes out and presses again. He's not going to throw for 403 touchdowns, but he looks like you know, a competent and quality quarterback and keeps him in it for a little bit. But ultimately the Bills are just, and their offense is just too much for the Jets to handle.
Yeah, it's going to, I think Buffalo's going to play well. I mean, they've been a little shaky the last few weeks, but they need this game, especially with the Patriots kind of creeping up on them in the AFC East race. So I'd be stunned if they didn't win, but I'll enjoy it if they don't. So it's good stuff for me. But Steven, you missed out last week when we had the watch party. That was actually one of the most fun things because, you know, we're hanging out. It was cool to see everybody. You know, a lot of cool people came. I know Caleb, I'm sure he's watching or listening at some point. really cool that he drove all the way from Maryland. He also got Joe and Connor a case of this Maryland beer that he likes, which is cool. Really fun time. Obviously, we're going to do that again at some point. But like we always say at the end of every show, don't forget to subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/turnonthejetsTV. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast feed on Apple, Google, or Spotify. Just Turn on the Jets. And then make sure, obviously, you follow both of us on Twitter. I don't actually do this most of the time for the show, but, you know, at Steven Russo and at Zance. But yeah, it's just, we appreciate everyone listening to the show. We're looking to try to figure out ways to make it better every week. And we just enjoy all the positive feedback. I know we're just fans, man. We're not like anything crazy here. And make sure you check out the Badlands as well. Really cool to see all these people who showed out for Badlands and Turn on the Jets last week. Best $3 or $5 over spent on Jets premium content. Steven, any last words? I feel like I always go wax poetic at the end.
No, man, it's all good. You summed it up. You know, like I always say, it's good in season when the Jets are playing terrible. You want to have some people to commiserate with. And when they're playing good, you want to hear more content because you want to keep talking about it and keep hearing other people talk about it. So subscribe to Badlands, tune in to TOJ, draft season, the TOJ pod, TOJ live, obviously, usually every Wednesday. This week is a little different because of Thursday night football. But thanks for tuning in, man. Or all of you guys, we appreciate all the feedback. I'm sorry I missed out on the get together on Thursday night. I bet it was electric when Mike White threw that TD to Elijah Moore.
It was.
Wish I could have been there for that, but next time we make it happen, I'll definitely make sure to be there.
One of the funniest things, though, I think it was like one of the first stats we got on offense. The place was going erupting like we scored a touchdown. It was really funny.
But, hey, a non-three and out first drive is something to celebrate for a Jets offense.
They've been better with that. The first quarter offense has been good the last 2 weeks.
I know it, man. So it's, you know, there's little improvements here and there. I think we can all get behind it. You know, let's keep it competitive the rest of the way. If the Jets can sneak out a few wins here, maybe get like, you know, 3 out of the next 5, it starts to paint a different picture and get some real excitement for 2022.
Agreed. Couldn't say it better, but thanks everyone for